Scott Fratcher for Radio for Peace International. And I come to you today with a heavy heart. As Radio for Peace International is in a crisis situation, the University of Peace, violating the UN Declaration of Human Rights, their only restriction in their charter given to them by the United Nations in their forming, has moved against the Radio for Peace in an aggressive action. They have chained our fences. They have posted guards outside of our doors. In short, they want us off the air. Maurice Strong, who appears to be a confirmed globalist, Undersecretary General to the UN, has decided that Radio for Peace must go, in a clear violation of at least three articles of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Maurice Strong is attempting to force his way through the University for Peace and against Radio for Peace. I have thought to myself, the news and information that Radio for Peace brings its listeners across Central America, South America, Mexico, the United States, and all around the world via shortwave. It's a listener base that has learned to trust Radio for Peace, and those listeners are being violated by Maurice Strong and the University for Peace. And I realized that this was such an important event to many people that it was almost like knowing where you were when John F. Kennedy was shot, when Martin Luther King was assassinated, knowing where you were when the Space Shuttle Columbia exploded in that tragic day, knowing where you were on September 11th, and knowing where you were the day that Radio for Peace found itself under the aggression of the University for Peace, so-called. Radio for Peace has asked the Costa Rican government to come in and mediate in this case. The Costa Rican government agreed, but the University for Peace refused. Radio for Peace has asked for a third party to come in and mediate, but the University for Peace refuses. This is a clear violation of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Radio for Peace has asked for their day in court as guaranteed to all citizens and all people of the planet by the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. But Maurice Strong apparently feels that he is above the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, that this is his personal fiefdom, and that the Radio for Peace is just not what he wants broadcasting. That Radio for Peace and their anti-globalization stance and their progressive voice on shortwave, the only progressive voice on shortwave, must go. With that in mind, I went around to listeners just like you and asked them to tell their story, what they were doing the day when they heard that the University for Peace had posted armed guards outside the doors of Radio for Peace and chained the gates, telling the employees and the volunteers of Radio for Peace that they're not allowed in to the buildings they built, even though they have a signed contract. And causing this standoff that has now lasted over 90 days with the volunteers and James Latham, station manager, Naomi Fowler, program director, Emily, and many others who have continuously occupied the building, not allowing the hired guards that University of Peace pays to come in and remove the equipment to take possession of the building that was built with Radio for Peace listeners' funds. So I asked those listeners what they were doing, and I found that there was a very diverse, a very wonderful group of listeners. And so with that, we're going to bring their story to you. So in the following, you'll get to hear what other listeners just like you were doing on the day that the University for Peace chained the gates and posted armed guards at the doors to Radio for Peace International. From El Rodeo, Costa Rica, broadcasting from UN territory.
I was in the engine room. I was in a tiny little cramped space about 2.5 foot square with my fingers stretched out in front of me, reaching for some improbable place with an improbable bolt that was improbably stuck. And on the radio, it comes Radio for Peace International. It's going to be their last time. And I went, oh, this is terrible. What are they thinking? Nobody's thinking. This is the only radio like that in the whole planet. And they're taking it away. Amazing. And so I stayed in the engine room and grieved there.
Sterling Allen, presidential candidate.
From this presentation where these guys were speaking basically among their own, as it were, there was no media there. There was no people from that they would consider to be antagonistic to their agenda. And in that presentation, he played a tape from Marty Strong's presentation to the Congress. It was called whatever year it was, World Congress. And they had, he was one of the keynote speakers. And as he was speaking, he made reference to the common people of the world, and he used the term cannon fodder. He's among those who believe that the population of the world, including the United States, needs to be drastically reduced because it is not, quote unquote, sustainable. And he referred to the general populace as cannon fodder in terms of their expendability, basically. I remember listening to his statement and just my chin dropped to the ground, thinking that these people would be so blatant in their language amongst themselves, thinking that they're among friends who believe commonly. And these are the people who are ruling the world from behind the scenes using the power of the purse by which they're able to get their influence into policy. Anyway, the important point here, if he was talking about this situation, the need to bring the population of the world into a sustainable level, he talked about a point-counterpoint dialectic kind of situation where you have, on the one hand, industry and development, and on the other hand, you have environmental concerns. And he talked about how these could be used to great effect by pitting them against each other. The environmentalists against the developers, that they are mutually exclusive and you can't have it both ways. And so you create this this critical situation, and then you have a climactic confrontation, and out of the ashes of the climactic confrontation comes people looking for an answer, and they then step forward with their answer, and they become the saviors of the world, as it were. And yet, they're the ones who are behind both camps, the development camp as well as the environmentalist camp.
Okay, hello. This is Emily Morales. I work at Radio for Peace International here at the station in Costa Rica. And I was been asked to talk about what I was doing when I heard that Radio for Peace had been evicted from its place where it's worked or operated from for the past 16 years. Well, I was lucky enough to be at the station at the time. I was upstairs working when James came down and told me that there was a Spanish-speaking lawyer at the door, and I went to help him out. And looked around, and apparently she'd been accompanied by three guards with guns in a big pickup truck. And she came to deliver a letter to tell us out of the blue that we had to leave the station in 2 weeks and take all our little things with us, as she told us personally when she explained it. And she apologized profusely with a big smile on her face, which made me wonder what she was smiling about. And it was rather a shock, and both James and I took a few minutes to recover from that. And then we started making calls, trying to find lawyers, trying to find people to help, and we were all alone at the station. All of our friends and volunteers had been given time off for vacation, and they had been working pretty hard, so they needed to take some time. And so it was just the two of us, and it was very, very scary to say the truth, because we didn't know what was happening and when it would happen. And so we, as I said, we started to write press releases, to talk to people, to communicate, to tell the public, to tell our friends, and get the word out and have people try to come and work with us. And we did that for a couple of days till finally one person showed up. As I said, everybody was out of town. And then the next day, everybody else came in. But it was 2 days of excruciating work and tension and worry and concern. And here we are, 3 months later, 4 months later, coming up again to another date. Another deadline set by the university for us to get out, and just today we've gotten another letter from them saying that there's no way that we can stay. However, we're going to fight it and go all the way with this and try to recover from the shock and from the economic impact of this whole situation.
What was I doing when I heard they were threatening to take Radio for Peace off the air? It was my first time ever going surfing, and I was really excited about it. We took an hour and a half bus ride to get there, and there were a few good waves, and Scott and a friend David taught me how to surf, and it was very fun. I stood up after a few tries, and it was very fun. I rode almost all the way to the beach. I look forward to doing it again. We got a very good surfboard now, and I can't wait to use it. And that's what I was doing when I heard Radio for Peace was under attack.
My name is Ricardo, and I'm a cruiser. I'm the captain of a small sailing vessel. And I just want to tell you what it was like for me when I first heard that RFBI was under attack and that they might be stopping our program and going it off the air permanently. I remember it very well because I was out cruising in the Las Perlas Islands on the Pacific side of Panama then. And especially when I'm out there cruising in the islands like that and I don't have access to local TV news or local newspapers and even sometimes local news broadcasts on local radio, I really depend upon RFBI to let me know what's going on in the world and to let me know the things that the BBC and the CBC or the VOA don't let me know. So I was in the Las Perlas Islands cruising, and I had been away from my boat all that day and not listening to the radio, out doing some spearfishing in my dinghy, and I came back happy and with a couple of fish. And when I went to see a cruiser friend of mine who was anchored right next door to me to take him one of the fish from that day, he asked me, "Well, have you been listening to RFBI today?" And I said, "No, what's going on? What is new in the world now that RFBI is going to let us know?" And he said, "Well, what's happening now is that RFBI is under attack, that their program might be going off the air, that they have a dispute with the ownership over the radio station, that there might not be any more RFPI. And I was really devastated because I appreciate the value of a news source like RFPI. I like to stay abreast of world events and what's going on in the world. I was a history major in college, and I take a real interest, a personal interest, in following politics and things that happen in the world that affect us. And RFPI tells me things that other radio stations don't tell me. RFBI provides me with information on what's happening behind the scenes. Their programming is always interesting, always upfront, and very forthright, and it really tells you the kind of news that you want to hear. So for me, RFBI is a very important news source and an important part of my life. And to think that I was going to lose that source, to lose that source of information that I depend upon so much, was really devastating to me. And I was concerned about what was going to happen to the station, and I followed their fight of what went on there, and I was listening with amazement and just totally incredulous with the way the police had barricaded the building. And I heard about the fact that all the staff that was inside the building at that time running RFPI, they wouldn't be able to leave. No one knew could come in. And I heard about people bringing food and supporting the staff that was living inside, and I heard about all of the work that they were doing to maintain the station, and I was immediately impressed by their defense of their rights and the defense of the rights of all of us to have unbiased news delivered to us without the filtering of the corporate media giant. And I was impressed very much with the stand that they were taking, and I wished that I had been there and could have offered some support.
What was I doing when I heard Radio for Peace was under siege? It was a special day as we were lucky to be diving with whales.
We were in the Las Perlas Islands off the coast of Panama.
We were sailing at about 1 mile an hour,
And, my two brothers and I jumped in the water and swam ahead of the boat, and there was a mother and a baby whale resting on the surface, and the water wasn't very clear. It was about 15-foot visibility. Usually it's about 30, 40. But we swam up to her, and we could only see the middle half of her body. The baby was swimming around the mother, and we approached the mother from her right side, and she turned and faced us, and kept turning, and so now we're on her left side, and then she dove. There was a female humpback, and she dove, and it was like a small airplane. Her pectoral fins were huge. They passed pretty close to us, but they missed us. And after she dove, we had to swim really hard to catch back up to our boat, since it was moving slowly, but it was still moving slightly slower than we could swim. But by the time we got back to the boat, we were all three of us exhausted. And we got out and continued sailing. And then my dad told us he was listening to the radio, and he had just heard the Radio Free Peace was under attack.
Hi, my name is Doug Colton, and I'm from San Diego, California. I'm currently living in Panama on a 43-foot sailboat with my wife. We've been cruising Central America for about 3 years. Being short of entertainment, I like to scan the short single sideband or shortwave radio frequencies and discovered a great little program called Radio for Peace that comes out of Costa Rica, and got to listening to it daily. And one day I had an interesting adventure which kind of coincided with Radio for Peace. I discovered that I was sitting on an island in the Bay of Panama, and I realized that I'd been there 20 years before, had met an elderly gentleman who wanted some 22 shells for his little rusty rifle so he could go out and survive and kill some wild animals to eat. That very same day, even though I was so happy to hear about him, I was saddened because I heard that Radio for Peace was having difficulties and was in danger of being taken off the air. To anyone listening, I would strongly advise you to support this station, and I think it gives us a very healthy, refreshing view of what's happening in the world. Thank you very much.
RFPI has supported us all along the way with our lifestyle that we have chosen to, on an alternative way of living, to get away from the monster, this corporate monster. We have jumped away from it and left it, so that we didn't want to raise our children in the ideas that they have to be always purchasing something to be happy, and so we found this forest and we're taking care of the forest. And when we first heard about RFPI being under attack, we were very much saddened, because it's the only source of information we have that's really true, that's really real true, because we know that the media that we see, well, of course we don't see it because we don't have a TV, but whatever we hear is not the real stuff. It's just something that's been made up for us to believe that it's not really true. And so we do need to have RFPI. We just have to have it. The world needs RFPI. We've all got to know this truth so we can come together and make it a better place. We really must have RFPI.
And Lynn, tell us what you were doing at that moment.
We got towed into Heart Bay Harbors because we've always had trouble with our motor, Jennifer. We came around Cape Agulhas and the wind died down and there was absolutely nothing happening wind-wise. The motor, the damper plate had blown. It was rattling. It had lying in pieces, rattling. And Chris and I had very, very few options available to us, because we knew that when the one wind dies, there's only a hour gap between the next one comes from the opposite direction. We were expecting a big west, so we called our friends, our fishing friends, because we fished for many years, and we called them on the radio, and we asked them if there was anyone who could help us with a tow. And unbeknown to us, Rescue Service was there with all their volunteers, 25 guys in total, and they immediately jumped in on the whole thing. Yes, yes, yes. We called us on Channel 16 because our radio couldn't transmit on any of the other channels because Chris and I, this is a second-hand radio, and there was a little button at the back, and if you didn't push that in, if you pushed it in, it held Channel 16 fixed. So if you released it, then you could scan the other channels. But obviously you only use 16 to call because you don't use the radio in South Africa to chit-chat like you do here. So you only use it on 16 and it's fixed. But anyway, so they got special permission to do the rescue on Channel 16. So everybody in Cape Town heard Malaika getting rescued. It was so embarrassing because this huge big rescue aid craft with two 240 horsepower motors comes tearing at us. Now the sea's like liquid ice. It's just ripple free. And they coming tearing out, and the next thing, the John Rolfe helicopters above us, and the guys screaming down with a loudspeaker, "Do we want to lift up? How many people to lift up?" "Go away!" It's just Chris and I. No one's leaving this boat. You've got to be joking, you know. I mean, we are in no imminent danger. The danger is the west that is to come. It's not here yet, so we don't need this, like, immediate rescue. But anyway, they towed us in with these two big 240 horsepower motors, and of course there's only one speed and it's on or off, so they were full taps ahead and we were tearing into Hout Bay Harbour. And they brought a woman on board because lots of volunteers, and they thought they'd bring the woman because I'm a woman to calm me down. And she said, I said to her, you know, this boat weighs 20 tons. I hope these guys pulling us at like what, 10 knots realize that we're going to take a little bit of time to stop. Because are you heading for that jetty over there, which is like right here? Yes, yes. Oh, break, break. So they had to, they screamed, "The Malaika rescue, break, break, break. We need a break. It's a 20-ton vessel." And it echoed right the way through Hout Bay Bowl. I don't know if you know about the Hout Bay Bowl. It's a natural bowl in rock. It's awesomely beautiful. And it's known for its katabatic winds because the wind blows in 40 knots, hits the solid sheer rock, comes running down and shoots back at you at double velocity. So known for its as a hectic port. I mean, you don't go to Hout Bay all year round. And so this echoed in this bowl, the rescue, stop, break, break, break. And they had to bring another big rescue craft in and they tied off at the back. And so we got to the jetty and it was jolt in the front and jolt at the back. And so embarrassing. That night everybody was getting hold of us to tell us that they'd heard about our successful rescue and wished us well on our venture around the world. And so that's where we were when we heard.
RFPI was going off the air. I'm not exactly sure what I was doing because it's hard to keep track of dates here sometimes. But I was probably working here on the farm, you know, like working around and taking care of the things that always have to be taken care of here. Probably washing the clothes, and cooking, and, you know, take care of the horses and fish and all the stuff that has to be taken care of around here. But, well, probably we didn't have the fish at the time that RFPI was going off the air because we haven't had the fish for very long. They're just kind of like maybe a month we've had them. But, well, they're okay down there. They're hanging out, you know. But, yeah, I've been really sorry to hear RFPI's been going off the air. Well, it's not going to go off the air, obviously, because we're going to help you guys out. But, and anyway, you guys can't go off the air. But we've always wanted to support you guys here, and, you know, it's just like you guys are the only source of news that we have. Papa always listens to you guys, and we always hear if there's anything exciting going on. We're like, "Hey, Papa, what's going on?" And he's like, "Oh, yeah, there's this and that going on." We're like, "Okay, cool." But it's really a good source of news, and we hope that nothing will go off, it won't go off the air and nothing will happen to it.
What was I doing the day that I heard that the University of Peace was acting aggressive and puffing up their shoulders and trying to go after a defenseless little radio station that had previously been given permission to build a building on the property of University for Peace? You know, they were given permission for that. I mean, this isn't like somebody just came on over and didn't pay their rent and is being evicted. No, the University for Peace gave permission to the Radio for Peace. They've got it on paper. And then one day, back in, I guess it was 1999, there were rumors floating around. Old Maurice Strong, he came forward and said that Radio for Peace must go, because he says so. And I heard that he had actually come forward now and sent his guards down and were locking the gates and locking the radio station out. And I thought to myself, he can't do that. There's laws, there's restrictions, there's regulations, there's the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And then I thought, you know, I don't care if he is a billionaire, and it doesn't really matter if he's buying bad coal plants in China and polluting the atmosphere at the same time saying that he's an environmentalist and greenwashing himself. He can't do this. There are laws and rules and regulations, and he has to follow those same rules as much as everybody else does in the world. He's not allowed to do this. There is a clear violation here. There's a Universal Declaration of Human Rights. There's a charter. There's laws. He can't just walk down there because he's able to hire thugs and hire guards and send them out there to the gates and lock the gate and just steal a radio station. Who does he think he is? I sat there all night thinking about that, and the next morning I got up and I went and I bought a bus ticket and hopped on that 20-hour bus ride. And when I got to the grounds of Radio for Peace, sure enough, the gates were locked, and I crawled underneath the gate and ran for the building before the guards actually got to me, got inside and said to James and Naomi and Emily, "I'm here with you. I'm standing shoulder to shoulder with you." And with that, once I got inside the station, I went and I found Jim Page's CD of Collateral Damage, and I turned on track number 9 over My Dead Body, and I played it, and I played it loud, and I played it again, and I played it again, and I said, "No. No, we're making our line. We're making our line in the jungle, and we're drawing our line right here." But you know, it's an interesting thing, because you look outside the door, and there's a guard standing there with a gun, and you say to yourself, yeah, guards with guns, yeah, little gringo standing inside of a station, pretty defenseless here. So I went out and I talked to the guards, and I said to the guards, you know, "Those guys up there, they may have diplomatic immunity, and they may tell you to come in here and drag us out, and they may tell you that you can do anything you want, but you don't have diplomatic immunity." And they said, "The university tells us we do have diplomatic immunity." So, of course, everybody called back to the lawyers, and that was a pretty stressful day, and then we got the call back, and the lawyer said, Yeah, absolutely. They have diplomatic immunity. But so do you, if that matters, because anybody that does anything on the grounds of University for Peace, because they were given a trust. They were given a trust by the United Nations, which, of course, they're obviously violating. Maurice Strong, Undersecretary General to the UN, is violating that trust, no doubt about it. Otherwise, why would he be violating the Declaration of Human Rights? And it's my belief that that's what Maurice Strong wants out of this deal. He wants to take over the University of Peace, not because he wants to teach peace, but I believe it's because he wants to get into that little niche of diplomatic immunity, where he can do anything he wants, make any laws he wants, control everything he wants, and when it's all over, nobody can say anything to him because there's no laws, because he had full diplomatic immunity. And so that was a tough day. And so from there, we started going out and talking to the guards and explaining to them that this is not just about us. It's not just about a few people inside of a radio station. This is about the planet. This is about water rights in Bolivia. It's about the price of gas in the United States. It's about Iraq. It's about the 300,000 listeners of Radio for Peace International who get news that they can trust. It's about a voice of the displaced people of the world. It's about the Zapatistas, the campesinos of the world. It's about 6 corporations owning almost every slice of the airwaves. It's about who's going to control the world our children are growing up in. It's about globalization. More, in a much bigger picture, it's about freedom of the press. It's about the information that's going to be disseminated. It's about our children. And the whole world right now is being globalized, being incorporated. And I tried to explain that to him. And over a few days, you know, we started to make a friendship and a bond. And it kind of reminded me of, you know, when you hear about the captors and the kidnapped victims and how they bond. And after a while, they become really good friends. And so we've become really good friends with the guards outside. And we know them all by name, and they know us all by name. And we talk, and I bring them coffee every morning. And we've become good friends, and I believe that if the time comes when the University for Peace tries to actually physically move us out of here, that they'll probably go and get other guards, that they probably know that too. And so that's what I was doing, and that's what I did when I heard that the forces of globalization, that the forces of evil were at the doorstep and rattling their sabers. And we've occupied this building now for more than 90 days, and we're going to continue to occupy this building until the evil forces of Maurice Strong and his cronies go back home where they should be and leave the world to the people that live in it.
But we are born of nature, and in nature we will die. Oh, and if we don't make it, it's not because we didn't try. No, it's not because we didn't try. They say they will incorporate the world over my dead body, over my dead body, over my dead body, over mine. They have all the money, but we have the will, and I would rather be a match than a paper dollar bill. Yes, I would. Yes, I would. They have the guns, all we are is flesh and blood, but we will multiply our numbers and drown them in our flood. Yes, we will. Yes, we will. They say they will incorporate the world over my dead body, over my dead body, over my dead body, over mine. They have all the power, that's what they say, but we will turn those tables, take their power away. Yes, we will. Yes, we will. We will not be dissuaded, and we will not turn around. We will face the barricades, and we will tear them down. Yes, we will. Yes, we will. They say they will incorporate the world over my dead body, over my dead body, over my dead body, over mine. You can call me a fool, that's all right with me. I will live to see this good round world breaking free. Yes, I will. Yes, I will. They say they will incorporate the world over my dead body, over my dead body, over my dead body, over mine. They say they will incorporate the world over my dead body, over my dead body, over my dead body, over mine.
Basically, I think I was probably doing the Pelton wheel system, having to clean the filters, because we have the energy of our farm is all run by a Pelton wheel in the river. So I had to clean the filters often because they get filled with leaves. So I was out there cleaning the filters and cleaning the carbons of the Pelton wheel to get our energy back. And when I came back to the house, heard the news, we're really upset by it. RFEI is our main source of news, and we always have been informed by it. My whole life, we've always been listening to RFBI. Been living here all my life for 18 years. Well, I came here when I was 5. But, really, RFBI is really important to us, and we're really upset to hear about it. It's, you know, it's a terrible thing to lose the voice of the people, and RFBI is really, really important to us and to all the people who are interested in knowing what's really, really going on. And we're really interested, and we've always been really interested about it. So, I don't know, basically that's what we've been doing, is out here working on the farm, taking care of a mountain with lots of trees on it and lots of water on it, and listening to RFBI. We've been pretty well informed, I think, about what's going on in the world. A lot of people aren't. A lot of people don't know what's really going on, and you have to pay attention. And RFPI is one of the really best sources we have found for doing that, especially where we live, which we don't have television, we don't have really any other means of knowing what is going on besides like alternative radio stations like RFPI, and there's not that many. And RFPI is really important for that reason, so it really should go on. Really, really should go on. Shouldn't be lost that way. We're really upset by it. I don't know. Really, that's just basically what we all feel about it out here. You know, we're keeping on going, and we're really hoping that RFPI will too. You know, we don't want to lose that at all. I don't know. What else?
That's great.
Yeah.
What was I doing when I heard Radio for Peace was under attack from corporate scum?
Well, I woke up
to the sound of you launching the dinghy, and it was wavy, it was really rough. When I went up on deck, you were paddling away in the other direction. There are lots of lights everywhere, and people were yelling, "Help!" I went up on deck, it was really cold. There was our friend's boat, Casimar, right next to us. He was about 5 feet away, and I thought he was going to crash into us. My dad went and got two guys out of the water, and he was trying to paddle back up to our boat, but the wind was too strong. So Rick on the boat Casimar went and jumped in his dinghy that had a motor on it and went and got my dad and the two guys and brought him back to our boat. But just as the guys were getting out of his boat, they swamped his dinghy. Then he was drifting away full of water, and he wasn't making any progress. So we had to put our dinghy together really fast, and my dad and my brother went to get him, helped him bail, and then came back here. We had to take up on our anchor because we're so close to this boat. We hauled up the anchor. My dad started the engine because we couldn't haul it up by hand, and the waves were too strong. And our anchor got caught in his anchor rod, and it was really freaky. We almost crashed into his boat. My dad pushed his bow came towards our bow, and the anchor came down on our Ama, and my dad was trying to push with all his might, but it still bashed a little bit, but it wasn't very much damage. And then after that, we moved a little bit and then reset the anchor, and he went off to the place where he was before. And the next day, it turned out that there was this big motorboat called the Pacific Queen who had, in the middle of the night, tried to leave. And for some reason, he had gone up next to Casimar, our friend's boat, and had actually pushed him over towards where we were. When he woke up, he went up there, and there was this big boat pushing on the side of his boat. Somebody fell in the water. He didn't know there was anybody in the water, but then somebody tried to throw a hand flare in the water from the other boat to try and light up the water, and it made a bunch of chemical smoke. And then everybody was yelling, "Fire, fire," so he thought the other boat was on fire, too. And then he got really scared. And by that time, they had pushed him all the way over to where our boat was. When my dad was going to get the guys in the water, they were circling with a spotlight, managed to get themselves untangled from our friend's boat, and they were circling with a spotlight looking for the two guys. And once we got him on board our boat, and my dad and my brother went to rescue our friend from his dinghy, they wanted to come up next to our boat, this huge boat. It was over 100 feet. They wanted to try and come up next to our boat, and we were just 5 feet away from another sailboat, try and come up next to ours and pick the two guys up, which was just absurd. So we told them to go away. We yelled at them, "Go away, and we'll just take the guys to their boat in our dinghy." So they left. And the next morning, the owners of the boat, the other boat that had caused all this damage, came out to our boat and for helping them and rescuing their guys, as a sign of their gratitude, they bought us a brand new surfboard, which was really nice. And that was what I was doing when I heard Radio for Peace was under attack from corporate scum.
My name is Jennifer Liss. This summer, I attended a pre-Burning Man party at The Crucible. The Crucible is a welding studio that is on the border of Oakland and Berkeley in Northern California. It was an all-night party with artists from all over the Bay Area, performing artists, welders, dancers, writers, visual artists, designers, and it was a lot of fun. Burning Man, for our listeners who don't know, is an event outside of Reno in the desert every year. It's an international arts festival, and for a week, once a year, 30,000 people gather in the desert to build a city. And it's a city without rules, and it's a city of peace, and it's a pretty amazing event. So I was coming home from the Crucible. It was about 6 in the morning. I had just had breakfast in the Castro, and I got home, and I checked my email, and I was absolutely shocked to see an email from Naomi Fowler, the program director at RFPI, stating that the University for Peace in Costa Rica was aggressively trying to remove the station from its land, which it had raised funds for over the last 16 years. And it was a call for help. So I responded to her email and signed the petition.
Just listening to the radio, I guess, and whatnot for milking the goats. And that's when I turned on the radio right then at that morning at about 8 o'clock, 7:30 or 8 o'clock, and I listened to, and I heard about the crisis that was happening, and we called up immediately as soon as we could to get some more information to find out what was happening. Our life is mostly very retired, very, very withdrawn from the community. We have electricity, we live very remotely, and so therefore RFPI is our umbilical cord to the to information that we can trust, and we're very grateful that they're on the air, and they have been on the air, and they will be on the air for a long time.
So, ich bin in London. Es ist einer der wenigen schönen Tage, die es überhaupt in London gibt oder in ganz England, glaube ich. Und ich komme gerade von dem Konzert wieder, Michael Franti Spearhead in der Royal Festival Hall in London. Und bin so begeistert von so viel Energie, so viel positiver Ausstrahlung, dass ich denke, endlich sind die Guten wieder einen Schritt weiter, den Bösen einen auf den Deckel zu geben. Den Bösen, den großen Kooperationen, den Bösen, großen Organisationen, die eigentlich nur Geldmacherei betreiben und nichts anderes, und der Gemeinschaft, den Menschen, die nichts haben, eigentlich. Oh, das müssen wir rausschneiden. Ich komme auf jeden Fall von diesem Konzert wieder und bin so voller Zuversicht und lese dann meine E-Mail zu Hause. Und was bekomme ich? Ich bekomme eine Nachricht, dass die University for Peace in Costa Rica, dem Radiosender, in dem ich ein paar Monate später mein Praktikum machen möchte. Diese University for Peace versucht, dem Radiosender das Wasser abzudrehen, sozusagen. Sie versucht, nach 16 Jahren den Vertrag zu kündigen und somit eigentlich dem Radiosender seinen Platz zu nehmen. Und das betrifft nicht nur den Radiosender, das betrifft nicht nur Costa Rica oder Zentralamerika, das betrifft die ganze internationale Gemeinschaft. Denn Radio for Peace International ist für alle gemacht und es ist einer der wenigen Kurzwellen-Radiosender, die ein breit gefächertes Programm, ein breit gefächertes internationales Programm an alle Menschen hat. An reich, an arm, an dick, an klein, dick und dünn, klein und groß, an alle.
Well, we've been working on this project for last 3 years more or less. So I'm almost positive I was out in the forest working on our project. Lately, what we've been doing, trying to conclude this project, is getting the lumber together and finishing the last details. So I actually recall it was in July, if I'm not mistaken, and that's my birthday month, and I was making the wood for the cabinets upstairs, and so I was probably making lumber. I came home, actually, that afternoon, because I lost my file, the file I was sharpening the chainsaw with. I just like to put in a little detail here. All the wood we're working with here, with the chainsaw work, is all like ecological wood. We've been finding it. Like you can see around here, all the dead wood that just like fallen, like the roots and the fallen trees. And we say we found all this, all the whole lodge, because every piece that has been used in the lodge has been like found. We've already actually gone out and looked for it, dug it out of the ground, and enhanced it. It's all just gorgeous, beautiful wood. So I was doing that. I would spend a lot of my time just, looking, having a try to artistic eye, trying to look at all these different kinds of beautiful artifacts that that nature has provided for us. And so I was, making lumber. We use an Alaskan sawmill, and just a manual way. I don't know if you're familiar with, but we actually just go out and we carry the saw out there and we hook it up on the log and just make planks out of it. And then I bring the planks home, and then I work on the planks with the smaller tools and the hand tools. So, right at that moment when I came home, my mom was, hell, Radio for Peace has just been under attack. And I was like, oh, no, because we listened to Radio for Peace. We've been listening to Radio for Peace since I can remember pretty much because I've lived here for 25 years, well, since I was born, obviously. And my dad is the guy who listens to the radio all the time. He every single day of the year, I mean, he has listened to RFPI and he listens to other, you know, different kinds of different kind. What's it called? News? BBC, not BBC, just informative news. Like, they're not the news that you generally run by, you know. He really likes the university radio just because he likes classical music as well. But I picked up the radio and I started listening to it just to see what was going on. And lately we've been really tuned in on RFPI just because we're really worried. And we sort of have that similar situation here on the farm. Obviously it's not the same, but we're under attack as well. And so we've been calling James and we've been really making a point of trying to, you know, give all our support and really make a point that this radio station has to continue because it's really an informative radio. And I actually believe that, I mean, if it wasn't for radio, and actually that's the easiest way for me at least to listen to the news, because I don't have time to watch television. I never watch television. I don't have time to read it. I don't have time to. The only time I really have is to turn on the radio, keep doing what I'm doing, and listen to the news. You know, that way it makes it so, you know, it's interesting. You know, your mind is off doing something else, and you're listening to the news. So that's what I was doing when I heard that RFPI was under attack. And right now we've been really supportive of them, and we're trying to see what we can do to get it so that it's stable again. You know. So that was me, Andrew Zeely, up here on the Voltas Mountain.
My name is Lara. I'm from Sydney, Australia. I found out about the university trying to close down RFPI when I was snowboarding in the Alps in Australia, and I was pretty devastated at the time because I was already working 3 jobs to come to this radio station to do a course and intern here, because I feel that the radio station does such amazing work in its field of providing good alternative information on world and political issues that are necessary for people in communities to find out, which they can't from mainstream sources. So when I found out that, once again, it seems that the Maurice Strong at the University for Peace is the main instigator, trying to shut down the station for seems various reasons, none of them any good, and it will be such a loss to the world for one of the last sources of this source of information going, and we need to fight to try and keep it.
James Latham, one of the founders of Radio for Peace International, someone who's been here from the very first day and conceived of the idea. You were here the day that they put the locks on the gates. How did that make you feel?
Scott, it was as if some of my heart just sort of was cut out. It was one of the saddest days of my life here in terms of the project. We've had so many setbacks and struggles with the station over the years, natural disasters, financial problems, and we've always were able to overcome those. But when an organization such as the University for Peace, which is reportedly part of the United Nations system, a system that we have supported for so many years, has come down to do such an action, aggressive action against the radio station, and not only just placing a chain and lock, which is a symbol, in a sense, when you think about it, of slavery over the hundreds and hundreds of years, placing that kind of a symbol, that kind of a thing on our gates, stopping us, attempting to stop us from continuing on this project, I was shocked, you know. I was hurt deeply by such an action. I won't say I had any ill feelings towards the University for Peace, because I know that all peace groups, all peace organizations, institutions involved in trying to make the planet a better place need to survive, need to grow, need to work out a better place, and we need every one of those. But it was so hard to understand why one organization would attack another in this. You could understand a peace organization perhaps attacking a verbally or even physically locking the gate of a munitions company or a company involved with making weapons of mass destruction. I do understand that. But another fellow peace organization, it hurt so very much. And on a few days later, we had the marvelous support of the past president of Costa Rica, Rodrigo Carazo, who was the founder of the University for Peace, as president who initiated it. And who's a man of peace. And this individual, Dr. Carazo, came out to our station to support us in solidarity. And to see the founder of the University for Peace have to crawl through the front gate that has been locked by this administration, to see that man, that very dignified human being, humanitarian, crawl, and this is the Dr. Carazo is an elderly man, to have to crawl under and through the gate because it was locked and they weren't going to unlock it for him, and stand beside us in solidarity, that brought tears to my eyes. That brought tears to the eyes of many of the staff here to see such an individual dedicated to peace mistreated in such a undignified way. It's something that will, an image that I will not forget ever in my life. And I will have to say that, you know, these things hurt, but it made us more, reinforced our will, made us stand in solidarity with one another, and then more and more people came out in solidarity to this project. People that didn't even know we existed, that heard about us, and started to write on our behalf, started to volunteer their time for this organization. And some of these people may never hear the signal of RFPI because they don't have a shortwave radio, or are there, they have a local community station. But they know and they care about what this radio station stands for. It is just one station, but in the world today, we need everyone. Every one of those stations that is, and every one of those organizations dedicating themselves to peace and social justice and the betterment of the planet. Not one less, but many more we need. And so we continue on in this struggle, more sure and more solidarity and more stronger than ever before to make this station work, grow, and continue its mission of serving humanity.